It is the voice of life which calls us to come and learn.
Hi folks, welcome to the Wired Roots podcast, where we share stories, perspectives, and tools to help you embrace complex challenges and better learn into the uncertain future as leaders, teams, organizations, and communities.
I'm your host, Tom Palmer, and I'm honored to welcome our guest today, Linda Biggs. Linda is the head of Ops, People, Culture, and Growth at Abigo, a company recognized for their innovative work in beyond sustainable consumer goods, whose mission is to help people connect to the food around them. Welcome, Linda, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so I'd like to start off, Linda, today just asking you to share a little bit about your personal story. So how did you come to the work you're doing now with Abigo?
It's kind of, I like to call it the long and scenic route through my professional career, but I really feel that everything that I'd done prior to this has basically set me up for what I need to do at Abigo. I started in the computer science sector, so I was a developer, and I went down that road and realized quickly that I was much more inspired by the people versus the actual tools and the products. So I moved through, you know, tried different things, IT audits, project management. And most recently, before Abigo, I was heading up a agency. So we had a tech startup and we had a services division, and I was heading up the agency there. And we grew very quickly from about 12 people to about 60 in about a 12-month period. So quite a roller coaster ride. And I realized at that point that I wanted to do something a little bit different. And during that journey, I learned a lot. But one thing I was really missing was a connection to other women, other female leaders. And I took some time to meet those leaders and to really understand what their fears were, what their struggles were, because I was going through some of my own. And I knew that through reading a book called Never Eat Alone. I don't know if you've ever read that book by Keith Ferrazzi. Amazing book, life-changing for me. But one of my mentors had mentioned that to me. So anyway, I held a three-month ramp-up event to International Women's Day. And it was through that event and through some of the panels that I set up that I met Tony. And at that time, Abigo is, we're hitting 10 years in 2018. So it's her 10th birthday coming up. And she's had quite the journey, but she's hit a point in her company where she's really scaling fast. And so everything I had done prior to that, which includes the operational pieces, all the foundational bits that a company that's scaling really quickly needs to have in place in order to scale sustainably, I've had, you know, experience with. So she's brought me on to help her with that. And it's been amazing ever since. So we've got big plans for next year.
Great to hear. Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I'm curious to know a little bit more about your role. Is your role at Abigo very different than some of the roles you've had in the past? And, you know, I think it's a very interesting title you have, Head of Ops, People, Culture, and Growth. Never quite seen that before. Could you describe a little bit more about what you do there and maybe how it's different from what you've done in the past?
Yeah, I mean, when you're working with a smaller company that's growing, there's you wear many hats, but there's key things that are needed for a smaller company. And Tony, as a founder, realized that her skill set was not in the area that she needed to have in order to grow this company. And those areas were people, culture, and growth. So my focus is those three things because they're really pillars that a company is based off in our opinion. The people, I've always said that culture, and I wasn't the first person to say it, but I really believe in culture eats strategy. You can have the best strategy, but if your people aren't aligned and engaged, you're going to have a really hard time hitting that strategy in a sustainable way. The culture ties into people, and the growth really is about all of the other buckets that you need to fill in order to scale your company. So it's an odd title, but I think a lot of people struggle, especially in a small company that's growing, to find a title that's really suitable. Things change really quickly. So for now, that's my focus.
Yeah, great. I really like that culture each strategy, and I'm curious to know a little bit more about that. So when you say culture, you know, what kinds of things have you done at Abigo or are you doing now to kind of help build or evolve the culture there?
Yeah, so I'll step back a bit because my experience with that is really anecdotal. It's, you know, I had a lot of really bad jobs and they were trying to do, you know, a lot of people can relate to that. And a lot of times I would go home and say, man, like if they only, you know, if my manager would only come and, you know, say hi to me in the morning, or if they would just ask us our opinion, like we have so many things that we could, so much information we can provide them, but nobody asked. And it didn't feel like anyone cared. And fundamentally, that's what organizations are built off. People. And the more we move into like SaaS-based big businesses, so, you know, online businesses, the more disconnected sometimes we get from the real users of our product, which is our customers. So if you're not listening to the frontline staff, if you're not doing it yourself, like Shopify is a good example. Their COO does frontline sales calls every couple quarters just to get that experience. And that's, you know, a couple hundred people organization. So it came from that. It came from my experience seeing, as an employee wishing that someone would pay attention or someone would ask. And now that I'm in the position where I can do that, where I can say, hey, you know, how are you doing today? Let's have, you know, a one-on-one monthly and let's just have a conversation. And how are you doing? So Abigo really believes in the idea of keeping food alive. And it's great that as a leadership team, we say that. And it's great that we put that forward to the world. But unless our people here at every level truly believe it as well, I don't think that we're going to hit our best selves going forward. So I take the time to talk to our production workers and say, you know, how do you relate to this? And give me some examples and just probing questions. And it's pretty interesting to hear. I mean, it doesn't have to relate to how I would connect with the Keep Food Alive, but it comes from their perspective and they can provide some really interesting information.
Interesting. Yeah. So I hear you're kind of describing how you are interacting with people within the organization. And I imagine you are kind of leading by example in that sense of, you know, asking people questions and, you know, really, you said, I think probing into, you know, their perspectives and viewpoints. Are there any other types of interventions that you are taking, for example, to get other people within the organization to interact amongst themselves in a certain way? Or you know, what other types of interventions are you making related to kind of this idea of culture?
Yeah, great question. So one of the things I really believe in also is radical candor. And I tell... So everyone that I speak to, I explain what radical candor is. So the older traditional model of organizations where you have this hierarchy of people is changing. Companies are becoming flatter. And because they're coming flatter, the way we communicate, especially with superiors and others, needs to change as well. It needs to be faster. So I can't wait to tell someone something that I feel they could have done better or, you know, giving them a kudos until their quarterly review. It's too late at that point. So I tell my team, And I encourage them to adopt the same practice. So radical candor means if you see someone doing something and you want to provide feedback, do it in a kind way, but do it in a direct way. Because in the end, that's going to cause less problems than not saying anything at all. And we've started doing that. And it's been really interesting to see the team adopt that, because a lot of times organizations, especially in, you know, frontline staff or production team, it's essentially a production environment. It's heads down and you kind of do, you focus on what you're doing and you don't really, the awareness is not on anything else. But with such a small team, I think it's crucial to have this awareness of other things going on around you. And our team has been adopting that, and it's helped with quality. It's helped with the interpersonal relationships with the team. It's helped with the information flow that comes back up through leadership. So instead of us having to pull the information from the team on maybe how something could be done more efficiently, they're now proactively telling us, hey, guys, like, we were just thinking about this and this is our recommendation. I guess it's a kind of, as from a leadership perspective, you know, you've heard the term open door policy. An open door policy is great, but a lot of times people don't feel comfortable walking through that door. It's intimidating. Radical candor for me is it goes both ways. So they give me feedback and I can give them feedback. And it's really about us being better as a team.
Yeah. Do you see a lot of, do you see people struggling with this kind of transition that you're speaking of? You know, you're speaking of a transition from kind of very hierarchical structures to a flatter organization. You know, what kind of challenges do you think people have in that transition, and how can people in leadership roles, you know, help support their own personal transitions to kind of, maybe they're in a position where they have a voice where in the past they didn't have a voice, or, you know, what types of support can leaders give to people in that type of transition? Have you found there are there training programs that help them through this, or is it more of a cultural thing that just kind of supports them over time?
I guess for where Abigo is now, we're a smaller team, you know, 20 staff on average. I think it would be a different approach than, say, if you were a KPMG with, you know, 5,000 people in your Western region. But for our team, it really is more one-on-one based. So you're right. Like, people do struggle. So when we hire someone, most of our team is on the production floor. And when we hire someone new, they're surprised at the level of communication that the leadership team has, at the level of interest that we have. So the fact that I take time to do one-on-ones with everybody on the production floor really comes to them as a surprise, because before it was, you come in, you clock in and out, and that's your job. We take it a little step further because I care about their opinions. And it's a slightly different approach for every person. And so any management level or lead person that I bring in, I'm helping to support them adopt the same strategies in order to support our overall culture.
Yeah. Would you say it's a different mindset than, is it requiring kind of a change in mindset from where they've probably been in the past to work in an environment like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a struggle for some folks because it does mean that you do take more responsibility, right? You have to take responsibility for communicating either your feelings, and some people struggle with that. So if you're, some people really believe that you have to disconnect your life to your work. That's sort of the old model. Coming from the tech sector, it's changed completely. People bring their life into their work and it makes it much more interesting. So for example, someone has they love pottery and they make pottery on the side. So instead of, you know, having to mention that at the Christmas party once a year at an organization, you are bringing it in. Maybe the organization buys some pottery off of you for Christmas gifts, or you can host a lunchtime workshop on pottery. Like, there's some creative things you can do to make people feel like it's more well-rounded. So it is a bit of a shift. And So to be honest, some people just want to be able to come in and do their work. They feel rewarded with that. They feel rewarded that they have a long-term sustainable job with a company that cares about them, and they want to go home. And that's okay. I'm not trying to force them into a mold that I feel is appropriate. But fundamentally, what I want to know and what a BGO wants to know is that are they empowered to do the best job they can? And that overall rolls up into the overall strategy for a BGO.
Yeah. So how would you see this kind of tying into, you know, how people are learning both as individuals, as teams, you know, as kind of the economy, the environment's changing faster and faster. Now, how do you see your role in supporting everyone to, you know, continuously learn?
Mm-hmm. One of the things I've seen change, at least over the last 5 years, is this acceptance of failure and sort of a redefinition of what that is. So, me personally, I was at times paralyzed at making a mistake. So I would avoid a situation, or I wouldn't try something new. And I realized, and there's definitely a cultural shift just overall, especially in the tech sector, that you fail quickly and you fail often. And there's no shame in that. And the learning that comes from trying something new and then failing at it, but then taking those lessons learned and applying it to something else is incredible. So from the Abigo perspective, that's an amazing thing to be able to do on a production floor when we're growing so quickly. Like Abigo's grown 400% this year. And we plan to grow next year. So how do we expand a production floor on a product that's never been done on a mass scale before? Tony, our founder, invented this industry and this category 10 years ago. So there's really no other model that we can follow. We're creating it ourselves. So being able to fail quickly and often, just from a logistics perspective on the production floor, allows us to scale quickly. So it's having that, I guess, that support. So if someone mentions something and we try it and it doesn't work, there's no shame in that. And over time, it becomes part of your culture. You can't force those things, but people become more willing to share ideas and try new things. And that goes with, you know, just in our company and what you do on a day-to-day basis, and also outside as well. So we have one lead in particular who has started getting into some podcasts on leadership and reading books that he may not have read before. And we have an Abigo library here where we buy books and people can recommend books and they can check them out. So it's interesting to see the books that go out. Yeah, it's pretty fun to see.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm kind of getting the impression you guys are supporting your employees to kind of be self-directed learners in a certain sense. Do you have any kind of more formal ways that you're, you know, helping people or giving people a platform for kind of sharing knowledge or, you know, sharing their experiences, that type of thing?
With the number of people that we have now, it's really informal, and we're trying to bring in some much more formal training next year. So, for example, if we promote someone, I provide them the mentorship, but we also allow them to have some offsite training. Mm-hmm. For all of our production team, we have, I don't know if you've heard of the book, The Connected Company by Dave Gray.
I've heard it. I have not read it, no.
So the idea that he brings is that, and we go back to sort of this hierarchy and this model that a lot of companies were built on, and it's becoming flatter, but he brings in this idea of pods and self-directed teams, like you had mentioned. Mm-hmm. And if we look at an organization as a machine, so you input something and you have an output because of that, and most of the time you're making sure that input provides an output that impacts, you know, the bottom line. Mm-hmm. things are changing with pods and organizations where it's more like an organism. So with a machine, if something breaks, the whole thing stops. Mm-hmm. And now you're having to fix it. And that's expensive. With organisms, you're constantly learning and growing. So we try in everything we do to create an organization that's like an organism. So we have self-directed teams. People on the production floor are trained on all stations, not just one. And they interact that way. Sorry about the phone in the background.
No, that's okay. So do people have kind of more fluid roles then within the organization? Do people have formal job titles, or is it more, is it kind of more fluid?
It's a little bit of both, I guess. So now that we have, with the production floor, we have much more formality around that. So we have people who are, we train everyone on all stations. And we do that because we find that it's more interesting for them day in and day out. And we have backup, so it makes business sense, but it also makes our team happier. And they have generic titles. We have a lead that provides them support. And then from HQ, basically our office, we have more specific titles like mine or B2B manager or Tony as a CEO. And we find that mostly helps externally when we speak to people outside the organization, but there's a lot of overlap, especially with our size and how we're growing.
Right. So I'm interested, you know, you guys are growing so quickly. How do you see your role kind of evolving into the future?
So Tony and I have had a lot of conversations about this, and the goal has always been to bring in the people that we need. Tony, one thing I give her kudos for is as a founder, especially someone who's been doing this for 10 years, often you find people having a hard time letting go. They've done so much for so long that handing over the reins is a really difficult thing to do. It's, you know, it's like handing over a baby. Mm-hmm. So she's been really good with handing over some really important reins to the organization so I can run with it. And she can focus on other things that she really wants to do for the company, but just different things than what she's done before. Mm-hmm. So my role essentially is to bring in the team to focus on what we, to focus on what we need for the next 3 years, and then to support that team.
Okay, interesting. So I'm also curious, you know, as somebody who's very focused on people and growth, you know, I'm interested in kind of your own personal approach to your personal and professional development. If there's anything you could share with us about, you know, how you are continuously learning in your role, and any kind of tips or that you could offer for, you know, either self-directed learning or just kind of continuous learning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of coaches. So if you can find someone either formally or informally, someone you respect, you can call it mentorship. But what I've come to realize over the last couple years is that the mentorship model, especially for women in leadership positions, it may be a little bit broken. There's not enough of us to take someone under our wing in the traditional way and kind of take us through. And it's a lot of pressure to put on one person to, mm-hmm. you know, to help you and help guide you. So my approach is really, and this goes back to that Never Eat Alone book and the strategies that he puts in place there, is that you go out and meet with as many people as possible and you learn from all of those people. I did that 2 weeks. I set aside and I was lucky enough to have the time to do it. And I met with over 100 people in those 2 weeks, and it was just coffee. Wow. But the amount of information that I got in those 2 weeks really set me on a new direction and really solidified some of the things that were sort of in the back of my mind, but I had put off because I was going through more of a traditional career path. So I would really encourage just going out. And I really don't like the term networking. I find it really icky, but the idea of connecting with people and just really understanding, like, what are you doing and how are you doing it and what are your goals? And somehow, because we live in this connected society, especially in a small town like Victoria, where we're located, it always comes back. And either I can connect someone else to this person so I can help them because I know that they have a gap in one of their skill sets and they need someone to help them in that area so I can connect those two people. Or I can go back to them a year later and say, hey, we've got this business idea. Do you want to work with us? So the connection point is something that I find really important for both learning and professional growth. And then I'm an avid reader. I've mentioned a couple books and you take them with a grain of salt, for sure. But I've gotten something out of most books that I've read, from good to great. I think a lot of your readers can probably appreciate that one and the Jim Collins books. But it's mostly self-direction. Formal training, I've had the traditional education. When I say taking the long scenic route type, you know, I have a diploma and a degree and then further education, and it's all great and there's nothing wrong with going that road. But I find that unless I'm super passionate about something and I want to dig into it deeper, the traditional sort of education model is not the right choice for me. I like more of the exploration and kind of hacking the system a bit by just getting involved and getting hands-on. Instead. So I would encourage that. So what I mean by hack the system is you really want to open a coffee shop. You know, this has been your dream forever. And it's always been in the back of your mind. Go work for a coffee shop or, you know, volunteer at a coffee shop for 4 weekends in a month. Or if you want to open up your restaurant, go and volunteer and get in there and just tell them, I want to understand it. You're going to learn so much from doing that. And it's either going to solidify your dream or it's going to give you some really valuable information to tweak it slightly based on what you learn.
Yeah, that's great advice. I really like that. And I have been making notes about the books that you've mentioned. I always take a book recommendation very seriously. So those are good on my list. You know, just a real quick follow-up question. I really liked how you emphasized, you know, meeting with people. And I think this is probably something that intimidates a lot of people. So I wonder if you had any, you know, quick advice about how you've reached out to people that you admire and how you've gotten them to agree to go sit down and have a coffee with you or whatever that might be.
Yeah, good question. I felt the same. For a long time, I didn't do it because, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, is why would they bother meeting with me? Who am I? Mm-hmm. And they probably get this a lot. The reality is that most people don't. Most people don't get asked. And I also encourage people to be direct. So one example, there was a tech leader here in town. He's a young guy, but he's done incredible things. And I've been following him for a couple of years and I just really admired what he's done. And sort of a whim, I reached out to him on LinkedIn and said, I'd love to take you for coffee. I want to pick your brain about this. And would you have, you know, 20 minutes? I'd really appreciate it. And he agreed. It floored me, but he agreed. He didn't know me at all. And what he told me during that time, he's the person who actually mentioned Never Eat Alone, was that people don't ask. And he wishes people did because there's value in that. And the fact that I was direct and told him exactly what I was looking for really helped as well. I wasn't vague. I wasn't out looking for a job. So that's different. Even if you are looking for a job, don't say you're looking for a job. Just ask them about what they're doing and get information. And it will always naturally lead back to opportunities. And the other thing that, and it comes from this book as well, is when you say you're taking someone out for coffee, take them out for coffee. So it sounds really simple and straightforward, but he mentioned to me that people will say, you know, I'll take you out for a drink or coffee, but then they never end up paying for it. So those little things, the fact that you would take the extra step to cover the bill. And it's not just him. I had that from a lot of people. So going up to the teller before the coffee shop, say I'm meeting someone, can you just keep a tab going? And I'll settle up later. 9 out of 10 times they agree. And when you go to pay, that just that little extra step shows them that you're really paying attention, that you value their time.
Yeah, that's good advice. I like that. Yeah. And in full disclosure, you know, that's, I really connect with that too, because that's a big reason why I'm actually doing this podcast.
I love that.
My guest. And so, you know, maybe you could also throw in, start a podcast, you know, you can, get a chance to sit down and interview people that have some great experience like you, Linda. And, but I like the coffee approach too. That's probably a lot easier, and it gives you a chance to sit down face to face with people, and probably something that a lot of people overlook, or they kind of feel like it's out of their reach
when there's
opportunities around you.
Absolutely. And don't feel bad. Like the worst that can happen is that they either don't get back to you, which happens, or they say no, which is okay. And sometimes it's a numbers game, and you just don't take it personally, and you just move on and you ask somebody else. But it gets easier the more you do. I believe in the idea of being comfortable with the uncomfortable, because I think that opens a lot of opportunities for folks, but it takes time and a bit of courage to be able to put yourself in those situations. So the more you do it, the more comfortable you get.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Linda, and I want to give you an opportunity to, you know, mention anything else you'd like to about Abigo, what exactly you guys are offering, and how people can follow up with that to learn more. That sounds like a fascinating work you guys are doing. So is there anything you'd like to share? Or I'll also include some links in the show notes, just so you know, but if there's anything you'd like to mention now.
Yeah, I mean, Abigo, I mentioned before, I'm sure your listeners know it's a beeswax food wrap. It's a breathable wrap. But it's more than that. And that's what gets me so excited about being part of this team, is that we're really about keeping food alive, which to us is a bit of a pioneering position. Like I mentioned, Tony invented this category. And so we're really setting the path up ourselves, which is an exciting and scary thing. And what I mean by that is no one's done this at a large scale. And so the impact that we have to help people and empower people to connect with their food. So relearning, we're talking about learning here, relearning what it means to keep your food alive. Like, what does a browning mean? And keeping food alive versus keeping food fresh. I think we've been so programmed over the last several decades to use something that's not natural. So plastic wrap is not natural. It's not breathable, and it really kills our food. But we've learned to use it and adapt our lifestyles around it. So now we have to undo that and learn to connect with our food in a new way. And that is huge, right? That's a huge thing. But that's something that I'm really excited for Abigo to spearhead in 2018, for sure.
Great. Well, Linda, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Very fascinating hearing your perspective on developing people and the work that you're doing with Abigo. Folks, please head over and check out the work at Abigo. Look forward to trying out some of that beeswax wrap myself. Do you guys have internationally? I'm actually down in Chile. I'm curious. Shipping internationally, or
we are internationally available. So we have two sites. We have a Canadian site. We're located in Canada, and then we have a U.S. site, which also supports our international orders. So anyone who's outside of Canada will be automatically directed to the U.S. store, and you can order there at abigo.com. And shipping is pretty reasonable. I think it's a $15 flat rate. It's free shipping in Canada and the U.S. So, but we are growing, so you never know. Chile would be a wonderful, wonderful place to have Abigo.
Yeah, it would. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks a lot for joining me. I appreciate that.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
And thanks everybody for listening. Until next time, this is Tom Palmer wishing you a full life of learning.